Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am smart. I am smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining me today. It's my pleasure, as always, to be part of your day. And I know it's like a dream come true for you. That's what you're saying, isn't it? I know you say that all the time. David Heenan is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's visiting with us all the way from Hawaii, the great state of Hawaii, the beautiful, magnificent state of Hawaii. David is one of the really smart guys in our brain trust. He's taught at the Wharton School. He's taught at the Columbia Graduate School of Business and also the University of Hawaii. Some of you may have seen his bylines in all of the important business publications of the world. He's the author of a number of books I'm actually looking at. Double Lives is one of them. Another one is Co-Leaders, the Power of Great Partnerships, and among others, including the new one, which I'm holding in my hand, which, folks, I predict is going to be a watershed book, Flight Capital, The Alarming Exodus of America's Best and Brightest. David Heenan, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jim, aloha.
Aloha to you, and mahalo for being with us today. I appreciate you your time very much, as always, and congratulations on your new book. I'm really proud of you and for you. This is really, it's not only a beautiful book, it's an important book, David.
Well, I think so. It was, in many respects, it was even a wake-up call for me, Jim.
Really? In what way?
Well, you know, I think for generations, I, like many Americans, just viewed this as the promised land, really a country so powerful with its allure so magnetic that any particularly foreigner would want to come here in search of a better life. And of course, that was true for centuries. But recently, and I really saw this in Hawaii, which is sort of the reverse of Ellis Island on the Pacific, about 5 years ago, I started to see more and more foreign-born Americans, very bright ones at that, start to reverse tracks and head back to their native lands.
Instead of expatriating, they were repatriating.
That's exactly right. And you know, this simply didn't happen 5-10 years ago because this was really the magnet. It was the great melting pot. It was, somebody called us God's crucible. But things have changed, particularly, Jim, particularly after 9/11. No question
right.
about it.
Well, you know, America has enjoyed a great run in the global community for a couple of hundred years now, really, and certainly for the last 100 years. The international language of aviation is English. The international language of business is English. Which obviously we're not the only country who speaks English, but you could almost say the international language of business is American, not just English. But we've got I heard someone say one time, David, why is this country so, you know, what are the indicators that you think make Americans feel that the country is so great? And he said, and this guy said, well, people are dying to get here. They're literally risking their lives to come here. This must be a pretty cool place. Well, it's still a pretty cool place, but some of the factors that you point out in your book, some of the things that are going on, are causing that dynamic to shift a little bit, isn't it?
Well, no question. In fact, Jim, actually, after I wrote the book, just last month, Pew Research did a survey of 17,000 people in 16 countries, and they were asked to look at six potential locations nationally around the world other than their own home country. Where would you like to live? In only one of those cases, and this was sampling Indians, did those people select the United States.
Really?
Every other one of them selected another country. Canada and Australia, by the way, came up at the top of the list.
Wow.
Again, that wouldn't happen 5-10 years ago.
No, so you're saying that you're seeing this as something that's really if you plotted this on a graph, this would be a pretty steep change then. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, and it really got, again, a jump start after 9/11, and I guess there's no question it was important in the aftermath of the terrorist attack that the government would necessarily tighten up its immigration and naturalization procedures. But clearly in the process, we got a bit heavy-handed and a bit bureaucratic. And in the process, we turned off a lot of not only potential newcomers here, but recent arrivals who now started to feel, a bit unwelcome.
Well, and so what you're saying is that where some people might have felt more welcome, even if they could get into the country right now, they might feel a little bit less welcomed in the process of getting here. And so why bother?
Absolutely. For example, foreign student enrollments, particularly at the graduate level, down in the last couple of years. For the very first time, they're down 30% right. In the last 2 years.
David, hold that thought. Folks, when we come back, I'm going to ask David this question about all this brain flight that he's talking about. My question is going to be, why should we care? And I think you're going to be interested in the answer. 20 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with our good friend, David Heenan. His book is called Flight Capital. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend David Heenan, the author of Flight Capital, brand new book, subtitled The Alarming Exodus of America's Best and Brightest. David, do you think that most Americans don't really have an idea, perspective on the importance of brain power in the development of our nation, of our education system, of our science, our sciences, our research, medicine, the marketplace? Do you think that we take for granted the brain power that we have?
Well, there's no question, and we clearly, Jim, we clearly have taken for granted the imported talent that's come from abroad. You know, whether it's been Alfred Hitchcock or Albert Einstein, without even trying, the United States was able to secure the first-round draft picks of country after country. And, we're now at a point where, as an example, a third of all of Silicon Valley's high-tech companies are run by Chinese and Indian immigrants. Over half of our PhDs in the U.S., including 45% of our computer scientists and mathematicians, came from another country. So this is foreigners have been a treasure trove of talent that have really supported the innovation economy. And when they start to backtrack, it really affects all of us.
So why should we care about that?
We're losing our best and brightest. Craig Barrett at Intel, who's highly respected, said, if this trend continues, it could propel us back to the dark ages.
That's hyperbole.
Yeah, what's especially, I think, worrisome is that exactly when we're starting to lose our grip on imported talent, our supply of homegrown Americans, native-born sons and daughters, particularly in the technology areas and in science, is also shriveling up.
That's where the danger is, because I think that's where Americans maybe are a little bit confused and maybe misinformed. Is we might it would be a natural patriot attitude to say, well, so what if they go back? We got plenty of smart people here. Well, maybe not so much.
Jim, in the early 1970s, we were number three in the world in terms of ranking regarding the percentage of our kids per capita that chose careers in science and engineering. Today we're 23rd, if you can believe that.
Right.
So, American kids now they want to major in sports management or go to law school.
Exactly. We're turning out too many lawyers and not enough mathematicians, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Well, David, there are two things. There are two influences that I want to ask you about that I've observed over the last few years. My audience has heard me talking an awful lot about over the last several years about our journey of intellectual property, and how globalization to me is the trade manifestation of our intellectual property journey, and I think that's affecting the folks the dynamic that you're talking about. But here's another one that I want you to comment on. When World War II ended, there were 20 democratic countries in the world. Today, there are approximately 120. The growth of democracy, which America has certainly led the way, has caused people who are the really smart people are typically, you know, they're more enlightened people. They want to they like to be around the opportunity to have free expression. That happens in a democracy. So is it possible that our own interest in developing democracy around the world has actually been somewhat our own undoing?
Well, I think you're right. The United States, really today, we can no longer dominate the world, but we can't escape it. And the realities are, with technology and globalization, those are, I think, the two most powerful forces out there. And they really have leveled the playing field and made it more attractive for people to consider going back home. There's something to go back home to now that didn't exist again 5-10 years ago.
When I talk to people, and as I have over the years, quite a few people who are living in this country, who are from other parts of the world, the African nations, the wherever it may be, and I ask them how they like the United States, they say, "Well, I like it." And I say, "Do you?" And I always say, "Do you wish? Do you ever see yourself going home?" And when they answer that question, if they say no, it's not because they don't want to be home. It's because they don't like the political instability or the conflicts that are going on in their countries. And if the more those countries become stable and become democratic, those people are going to want to go back, from taxi driver to taxidermist.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, as one Irish scientist told me, he said, "You know, Dave, let's face it, nobody ever really wants to emigrate. I mean, most of us have left Ireland or India for better opportunities. Either conditions were so horrible back home or we were politically oppressed." But again, as you indicate, those changes have really started to take hold, and many of these countries are very much on the move to the head of the class.
Get started talking to us, David, about what America needs to do to deal with this. And folks, I hope you're taking what David is saying to heart, because it's a real thing that's happening. Go ahead, David.
Well, I think, Jim, if I had my druthers, I'd ask everybody to take a plane trip, preferably business class, to an India or an Ireland or an Iceland or an Israel or a China or Singapore, and just see what other countries are doing, because many of them are very much on the move, and a lot of them are mini-states. They're not the huge nations. They're, again, places like Singapore and Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Oh, David, hold on to that thought. We're going to come back, and David also has some topics, a call to action, actually, a list of 12 topics. We're not going to get into all of them that he thinks we need to be doing to stem the tide of this brain exodus. Right after these messages, it's 10 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate, and David Heenan is our guest. Let me spell his last name for you, ladies and gentlemen. It's H-E-E-N-A-N. David Heenan. The book is called Flight Capital. David, you got a website?
I do. It's flight-capital.com.
All right, check it out, and they can read more about the book, probably get a table of contents, maybe a chapter or two on that page.
Absolutely.
And can they buy the book there?
Can buy the book right there. Yep.
All right, I hope you will, folks. Hope you'll check it out. This is a very important book, I'm sure it's available wherever books are sold as well. David, and again, congratulations on this important work that you've cranked out here. Let's get back to what you think the United States needs to do to stem this tide. And let me ask you this question first: can it be fixed? Can we check this thing?
We can, but it's going to take some time. You know, Jim, the National Science Board just took a look at these very issues and said, believe it or not, if we started right now, it could take us 10 to 20 years to
a generation
get back to where we were. Yeah, a generation.
Yeah.
I mean, that just shows you how much we've slipped, or
right,
alternatively, how some of these other companies have really started to nip at our heels.
We have been great. More recently, part of our greatness was because of imported talent, and once that imported talent repatriates, we're left with whatever we've got left.
Absolutely. That's exactly the issue.
And so what should we do?
The alternatives are, Jim, I think half of the recommendations in the book relate to being more accommodating to our immigrant population. You know, we talked about the visas, the work permits,
right,
and so forth.
HV1B visas, I think they call them.
That's exactly right. I mean, we ought to be a whole lot, more accommodating with those, particularly, you know, we ought to be a bit selfish and really target, as does Australia, Canada, Germany, and a number of other countries, skilled and talented workers as opposed to just Tom, Dick, and Harry.
But if they're more likely to go back, David, should we bring them over here and educate them and let them learn all of our best practices and take it back to compete against us?
Yeah, well, actually, Jim, you know, I think the people that I talk to, most of them, in fact, got on the boat or the plane to come here with the idea that this was a one-way trip.
Mm-hmm.
They really had every expectation of staying here, and I think they still do. There are, however, things like glass ceilings, particularly in our bigger companies, that Indians and Chinese engineers and scientists ran into, and for them the only option, if they wanted to progress, was frankly to go back home and in many cases start their own business.
Well, or start their own business here in the United States, and many of them did that, and many of them are being very successful with that right here in the United States. What are some other things we need to be doing?
We clearly have to fix our educational system. There's been a lot of hot air, a lot of rhetoric in public school reform, but the fact of the matter is until we can really overhaul our educational system and get it back into a world-class setting, you know, Americans, Jim, on the last international rankings were 24th in mathematics, 23rd in problem solving.
I mean, wow,
it's ludicrous.
Where are we stuck? What do we got? What's the first thing we got? You're the president of the United States and in charge of the education system, and you get to make one decision, and it has to be fulfilled. What would you do?
Well, I'd put my time and effort on the public schools. I really think it's hard to solve it at a national level. I think the fact of the matter is you've got to get your local school boards, your local communities, you know, really stuck into it, and particularly put a heavy premium on math, science, and engineering, and make those subjects cool. I mean, you know, one in Ireland, one of the guys, an Irish professor, said, you know, Dave, in Ireland, geeks are good and computers are cool. That's not the case in the U.S.
What's another thing that you could do?
Well, I think we've got to, again, support our universities, particularly our public universities. If there's one thing we really have going for us, it's particularly our graduate education. But that has started to slip as well, particularly at the undergraduate level and, again, especially in our public schools.
Mm-hmm. Do you think our universities are becoming too politically correct?
I certainly do, and I think we ought to be a bit more open-minded on research. A number of these countries, Singapore in particular, Israel, Ireland doing a lot of work on stem cells. They've been very innovative in that area. You know, we've tended to back off it and sort of walk around it.
But it sounds to me like, David, that the next presidential campaign, the smart candidates, will be quoting your book.
Well, I hope so.
Well, and all of them, by the way, all the future presidential candidates are listening to the show. So, folks, you all you guys out there, and ladies too, you might want to pay attention. Flight Capital is the book. The author is David Heenan, very smart guy. Thanks, David, for being here. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Jim. Aloha.
Congratulations on the book again, and mahalo to you. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Aloha.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.